Monday, June 29th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we're in the book of 2 Samuel. We're in chapter 6, looking at verses 1 through 11 with a message titled, He Isn't Safe, But He's Good.
Is our conception of God, who He is, a correct one? Or is it formed by our wishes and desires? How do we forget God in our lives? And it comes with a great call to reverence God in His holiness, to be in awe of Him and His majesty, to recognize and have some kind of conception in this life of what it means that He dwells in unapproachable light. What is all of this?
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
I invite you to turn to 2 Samuel this morning, chapter 6. We are, as I said last week, we started last Sunday night our new sort of series, Essential Bible Texts. And today we'll be doing this for some time, looking at moving around through many different important texts in the scriptures. And I've moved this to the morning tonight. We come back and continue our study in Matthew. 2 Samuel 6, and here we have the account of the ark being brought to Jerusalem. I will read through verses 1 through 15. Let's give our attention this morning to the holy word of the Lord. David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000, and David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who sits enthroned on the cherubim. And they carried the ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the ark of God, and Ahio went before the ark. And David and all the house of Israel were celebrating before the Lord with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. And when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him down there because of his error, and he died there beside the ark of God. And David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah. And that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, "How can the ark of the Lord come to me?" So David was not willing to take the ark of the Lord into the city of David. But David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. And it was told King David, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God." So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of God had gone 6 steps, he sacrificed an ox and a fattened animal. And David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. When it comes to the worship of God and our dealings with him and him with us, we have so many commands in the Bible that govern this great privilege to come before the Lord and to worship Him. Think of what is a common verse entering into worship that I read. "The Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him." Silence before Him in the act of worship. Fear, trembling. Do we know what that is? "Tremble, O earth, at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the God of Jacob," Psalm 114. The psalmist trembles in Psalm 119. "My flesh trembles for fear of you." I am afraid of your judgments. Your own salvation, Philippians 3, is to be worked out with fear and trembling. Do we even know what it is to tremble before the Lord? Have we ever thought about that? Have you ever trembled before the Lord? Or is that just such a foreign concept that it's completely alien to experience in life? It's all over the Bible. The command has always come with a call to fear and tremble in worship. My question then is to be challenged in our day in a healthy way. That's the intention of this. Is our conception of God, who he is, a correct one? Or is it formed by our wishes and desires of what we want him to be, who we want him to be? To be something other than what he's actually said in his word. Remember how I started with the law. There are things we may not like to hear, but that are necessary for us to hear. This morning we come to a passage that, at its basic meaning, is calling us to avoid this great problem of forgetting God. How do we forget God in our lives? And it comes with a great call to reverence God in his holiness, to be in awe of him and his majesty, to recognize and have some kind of conception in this life of what it means that he dwells in unapproachable light. What is all this? The account of Uzzah is so important for the church. God inspired moments like this throughout Israel's history, and we need moments like this. I think sometimes people will come back to this, but look at these passages and think, this is the old vengeful God of the Old Testament. No, we need moments like this. Can you imagine having no conception at all of who God is properly and how dangerous that might be? What we have this morning in this passage is, at least as I sort of gave the 3 points, a fashionable procession as the ark is being brought back to Jerusalem. A fashionable procession. And then we have a deadly outbreak. And then finally a cautious response. It's a beautiful reminder to us this morning to not forget God. To not forget God. 2 Samuel 6 provides us to give some sort of history here and background so that we can properly understand what's happening and have some context. It brings to us the amazing account of the Ark of God being brought back to Jerusalem by the great King David. Israel had just entered what you might call a new season of life, a time period of great change, a time period of progress. Saul was now dead. That was an absolute disaster in their choice of a king. And we read in the previous chapter that, just the previous chapter, so that I think you see in these moments of these sort of passages, great enthusiasm breaks out before something like this happens. We read that all the elders came to Israel, to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them before the Lord. And there we read that David was anointed king over all of Israel. This was Israel's Old Testament, the greatest king. The greatest king. The kingdom before this had been divided, if you know the history. They had been at war. But with the securing of the throne by David, we have a moment here. Again, things would not always go this way, but we have a great moment here of unification again in Israel and Judah. Things were back to the way they should have been. It's those moments of great unity and harmony and peace in the church when you experience it. It's a sweet thing, isn't it? Don't ever take it for granted. What a time for rejoicing, of building and growth. Israel was again unified. To add to the excitement, we read in chapter 5 that this unified nation and empire defeated the Philistines, their greatest enemies. So they are on cloud 9. They have a moment here of a sense of God's presence among them. We can imagine the feeling that God was among them again, and whatever cloud was over them seemed to be gone. What blessing had fallen on Israel again. What wonderful days for Israel. What wonderful days of newness, advancement. What wonderful days of happiness. What wonderful days for exalting. But there was one major piece missing from this whole equation. And it was the Ark of God. You remember the Ark constructed as in Exodus, and the details that were given in Exodus 25 and the building of the Ark. It was made and designed to represent God's presence among them symbolically. God had come down when the glory filled that temple and had filled the temple, and the Ark represented the presence of the Lord among them. It brought the reality of the forgiveness of sins in Christ. It all pointed to this. You remember, it was a sort of type of Christ. Christ walking among them by representation of the Ark. That spoke of the sacrifice that Jesus would make. All those sacrifices of blood and goats. While they did not forgive sins, this pointed to the once-for-all sacrifice. And so on that mercy seat, remember, the high priest would go in and sprinkle blood, pointing to the forgiveness of sins in Jesus Christ, who by faith received that, received peace from God. A visible manifestation of God's presence. Well, there were problems that happened along the way with this. With the presence of God, what would life be without God being among them? That was Moses' great appeal. You have to be among us. The last time we read of the Ark, as we get to this point, was with the wicked sons of Hophni and Phinehas, who took the Ark into battle as a magic charm and put it out in the middle of the battlefield and used it as a presumptuous weapon, thinking, if we just put the Ark out there, we win. And then, of course, the Ark is captured. devastating. To their eyes, God was just captured. Well, not really. Philistines learned that as their god Dagon was found broken with palms bowing before the Ark, if you remember the story. Well, after that whole event, it stayed in the house of Abinadab until our text here in 2 Samuel chapter 6. We haven't heard anything about it. So, we read in verse 1 that David gives the summons. He gathers together from Israel 30,000 choice men. Think about this gathering. This is a magnificent gathering of 30,000 men. And they rise together and they went with all the people who were with him from Baal, Judah. The procession is huge of Israel. And they go there to bring from there the Ark of God. We are getting the Ark back. Verse 2 says the Ark, which is called by the name. We are really being impressed with here the greatness of this vessel. Called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim. We just sang that from Psalm 99. Enthroned between the cherubim that are on the Ark. So again, symbolically, the angels and the cherubim with wings outstretched, God set. There was an image of the throne room, and there on that Ark was a mercy seat, and there was a picture of the throne room in heaven, God symbolically dwelling with them. You could imagine the excitement of this. You could just imagine the excitement. Is there a better moment in Israel's history? Great enthusiasm fills the people. They're all praising God with voices and musical instruments and walking along. What energy! What a great emotional surge, a rush of emotional excitement, praising God for coming among them again. What are those moments when we really feel like doing this? Really expressing ourselves before God. Singing out as loud as we can. It can be a powerful moment. It can be a powerful experience. We know that. And this is the sense of the text, beloved. Great joy had filled 30,000 men. If you've ever been in a place where all the men are singing out with great voices, you go to our synod meetings, it is an experience. That's happening. A procession. Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the Ark of God on it. You'll notice that there. And they carried the Ark of God. Ahio was walking in front of it. David and the whole house of Israel were celebrating. You'll notice this. With all their might. Have you ever done that here? With all your might. And after what event? All your might. That's what they're doing. And they pull out the songs and the harps and the lyres and the tambourines and the sistrums and the cymbals. But there's one little detail. Just one little detail. Come on. You could rewrite over. We read, then they set the Ark of God on a new cart. You could read right over it. What an insertion. This is the most holy vessel in Israel. The symbol of God's presence. Sacrifices take place. Now, what we have here, the law itself, if you think about the law given so many years earlier, the law had said and commanded that the Levites, the sons of Kohath, carry the ark. And it was to be on their shoulders, carried by poles, as Moses had commanded through inspiration of Scripture by God. God had given this by command in Exodus 25. Here it is. You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, and you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry the ark by them. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it, ever, in transport. Furthermore, the touching of the ark was explicitly condemned. The sons of Kohath shall come to bear the ark, but they shall not touch any holy thing lest they die. It was so holy. If you just touched it, it was immediate death. I was talking with one of our deacons on the way in, and he said, you know, we were talking about this passage yesterday, and he said, you know, it's like, and I think there was somebody, maybe from this congregation in a dairy years ago, who touched an electrical grid. Immediate death. Immediate death. So there was law provided about this. There was law provided about this. The insertion is sort of added here as you're reading it, as if it's no big deal. That's the surprising thing up front. It's added as if it's no big deal. They make a new cart. And the question you have is, well, where did this come from? Why would you do this? Why would you just do this? And the answer to that, as I study the scriptures and look at it, I think it's pretty clear that when the Philistines had the ark and it had been captured by the Philistines and the ark knocked over Dagon, their god, face-palming him, face-planting him, the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, and said, what shall we do with the ark of the Lord? Tell us how we shall send it back to its place. Now then, get a new cart ready. Now, I don't expect them to have the law of God. Get a new cart. Get a new cart ready with two cows that have calved and have never been yoked. That's pretty amazing. These are holy cows. Can cows be holy? Hitch the cows to the cart, but take their calves away and pin them up. Take the ark of the Lord and put it on the cart, and a chest beside it, put the golden objects that you're sending back to him as a guilt offering. Right? Those are tumors. Send it on its way. Well, the clear thing that's going on here is Israel took their cue from the Philistines. And how to move in all this time, the deities, the ancient pagans, move their deities on these carts. That's how they transported their gods. They could touch them. They could handle them. Their gods would be touched and handled. This cart must have been state-of-the-art from Israel. You think they made a slacking cart? Oh, no, this cart was something else. They called the best artisans in. If the Philistines built an ark, we will build a better ark, and our procession will be greater. God deserves better from us. Build a cart that far exceeds that of the Philistines. They studied it. I bet the whole cart was overlaid with gold. What a moment. What a moment. It's so sincere, isn't it? I mean, who would disrupt this? And why? And then something shocking happens. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the ark of God because the oxen stumbled. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of the irreverent act, reading a different translation. Maybe that's ours. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died there beside the ark of God. Now, maybe we can get a sense of what happened. In the moment of the highest joy and the highest excitement, as it's taking place, one of the oxen, they're on a hill, and one of the oxen just simply stumbles. And this is rough terrain. To prevent the ark from tumbling down the hill in shame, can you imagine the horror of that? Uzzah just simply does a save. He puts out his hand to stop it and grab it. And as soon as his hand touches the ark, God's wrath is kindled. The Hebrew word here has a sense of intense, hot anger. That God somehow, before the whole assembly, in a visible way, did a death blow to his save in front of everyone. The idea here is a strike or a blow. God struck him. Do you know God can strike people? Do we believe that?
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Be sure to tune in next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.